Sexy and Van City may contain adult content. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Sexy and Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. Welcome to Sexy and Van City Radio 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners. However you've decided to spend the hour with us, we are very, very glad to have you. I'm really excited because my guest tonight is someone I've wanted to hear speak for a very long time. And this is even cooler because I actually get a one-on-one conversation for the hour. He is a Vancouverite. He is an amazing scholar and he's a teacher of Vedic yoga wisdom for the past 40 years and has developed a series of seminars ranging from the heart of the corporate warrior to karma, to the Ayurvedic body types, and of course this one I'm very particularly curious about, even though obviously I am for all of them, but the Ultimate Relationship Seminar. And if you haven't figured out who I'm talking about, he's also an amazing author as well, and I've got some of his books in front of me. The Spiritual Teachings of the Avatar, the God Goddess Astrologer, and The Night We First Met, A Mystic Journey. And in case you're curious and you haven't figured out who yet, I've got the amazing, the sexy, the wonderful Jeffrey Armstrong on. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Who could say no? Thank you, Caroline.
You're welcome. So I know in the, I'm very excited, as I was saying in our pre-show chat, Alice, who is a mutual friend, was able to connect us. And when she'd asked me if I'd ever had you on the show, I was like, no, but I had wanted to come see you speak when you were speaking at one of the huge conferences a couple of years ago. And it was one that Deepak Chopra was there.
Yes, the Seed Conference.
Yes.
Seed Event.
Yes, we had gotten free tickets to take some of the women in Vancouver's downtown east side. And I was heartbroken that I, because obviously for selfish reasons, wanted to go too. But the women really, really enjoyed it and went for the 2 days. So it was pretty cool. But you were one of the speakers I'd wanted to see. So I was quite delighted when she's just like, have you ever had this man on the show? And I was like, no, but I'd really like to.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So you've had quite the journey, and I didn't know that you used to be a radio. You used to do radio as well beforehand.
So I did.
I wanted to just check in with you and just see how you've gone from radio and how your path has shifted, because you've done some amazing work over the years.
Well, when I was in university, I was in theater arts, even in high school.
Okay.
So I always had. In fact, I played God at a choral event in high school. And God stepped out into space, and he looked around, and as far as the eye of God could see, and I was about, 4'8" and 100 pounds, but I made a big God voice.
Well, you match your voice now, so you're definitely not 4'8" and 100 pounds anymore.
No.
Yeah. So how did that transition shift as...
Well, we're all in disguise. We're all something different than we appear to be. And in the time we live in, I would say, all kinds of interesting beings from many different cultures. It's probably colonization stirring up the pot. So people are reincarnating in environments that you wouldn't expect them to be in. Shaman and people who were yogis in a previous life. And so if you grab reincarnation and get it, it's that you don't just have one life, but you're a permanent being on a journey. And each life is a frame of a larger journey and learning that you're on. The universe is a university. And so I'm one of those beings who, at the beginning of his life, looked around and said, I'm in the wrong place. Mothership dropped me on the wrong planet somehow. And so I had to start learning right away who I was and why I was here and why the people around me seemed to be crazy and why they were dropping bombs on each other and marriages were falling apart and people were going to mental institutions. So I dove right in and started that learning at a young age.
Which is pretty cool. I know one of the things we talked about in our pre-show chat was just, and I call it 9 to 5, where people get stuck doing a job that pays the bills as opposed to something they're actually passionate about. And I hear it all the time, like, I want to write a book. I want to do a movie. I want to take a dance class. And people don't, where it's, almost like they wait till it's too late, mm-hmm. and they choose not to.
This is an important idea, mm-hmm. and it's called in yoga moksha. It means freedom. And according to yoga, not just the postures, but the whole idea of yoga, we're ultimately seeking more freedom. And we should do everything to free each other. If we tie the knot, we have to be careful that we haven't tied someone to the floor.
Yes.
And put them in jail.
That makes perfect sense. And especially considering people always joke about that, like their ball and chain as a figure of speech. Mm. But sometimes they get really curious where those figures of speech derive from.
Yeah, if I have another half, does that mean I'm half a person?
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep from making each other into half a person?
So that, how do we keep ourselves from making the other person half a person?
Well, one way is to be dedicated to freedom and therefore to see each other as beings who are on a long journey and to see each other as divine beings who are more than they appear on the surface.
So in other words, if you consider somebody and love and respect them and honor them as divine being, there's less chance of taking them for granted, which I think sometimes is how we get into that cesspool of where we don't know where to go, and yet we're screaming for intimacy in a culture that has so many ways to communicate, but yet is kind of confused as to how to get there.
Yeah, think of objectification as something that we do unconsciously first to ourselves and to others. We think you were the outside, the surface. But we don't say, I hand, we say my hand. So I must be somewhere in there. And I must not just be what I appear to be on the surface. To remember that and live with someone as if you were the body, but to remember that you're the consciousness is a trained skill. And our culture hasn't had this so much.
No, we
haven't. Our ethos isn't reincarnation in many lives. It's one lifetime and dire consequences.
And very much so, which I think is why there's so much fear around death. And
yes.
Yeah.
And even around relationship. Because we've been told that what we do in relationship could make someone powerful very angry. And so it's already a dangerous subject and hard to learn then.
Very much so. And as well, I think just we're brought up on fairy tales as well. Where I think a lot of us don't really know what happily ever after is. We forget that there's a lot of work. And as you mentioned, just recognizing and honoring someone as a divine being. And I think we forget that, where we think it's going to be this easy, wonderful ride, where it can be if we do that honoring and do the work that comes with that and the sacredness. Because relationships are sacred.
What if we saw them as choosing a different vehicle each time they come back? And what if, then, one of the things to do is to really learn to see the passenger as an amazing divine being? And the second thing is to ask, I wonder what kind of vehicle they're in.
Okay.
And I wonder how their vehicle would be compatible with mine.
So if we start looking at it through that lens, we almost have to relearn everything that we know about our relationships. So how do we recognize, and if we're going to start from childhood, the way we teach sex ed in schools, which drives me crazy because we don't have any relational support with that. You could wave a magic wand and say, starting at like four, starting in preschool stuff about how to honor and support people, where would you start with that in terms of looking forward towards the future for them to find somebody and recognize what that vehicle would go with mine?
So this relates to your first question. My journey led me eventually to go east in all of its different forms and to start at the bottom of what they were talking about. And what they said was, you're a divine being. So that part of you is a little more invisible. It's at the core of who you are. Harder to talk about. But you're in a vehicle that is made of five elements: earth, water, fire, air, space. Things you can see around you. So every time you come back, you get to be a particular gender and you get a particular vehicle. Some people got a Volvo, some people got a Volkswagen, some people got a pickup truck.
Some people got Ferraris.
Some people got Maseratis. Some people got a jalopy. And so being with someone is going down the road with a particular vehicle. So all throughout China, all throughout the Asian quarter, from Japan all the way across to India, the body type is a crucial learning so that you can come to recognize the kind of vehicle that people have. Mm-hmm. And you can decide which vehicle do you go down the road with best.
Okay.
See? Imagine you're driving out in your car. You see someone in a pickup truck, and you're in a sports car. You lean your heads out the window, and you look at each other, and you're cute. Yeah, so are you. What's your name? Oh, I'm Mrs. Da-da-da. You start to talk. Mm-hmm. You kind of like each other. You think, this is pretty good. Might even kiss a little bit and think, ooh, that feels good. So now we decide, let's go down the road together. So you strap your Volkswagen or your sports car to this pickup truck. How's that going to work?
It could be very challenging.
Mm-hmm. What if the pickup goes off-road?
Sports car is going to get stuck on the gravel.
Or ruined, mm-hmm. or torn apart.
Yes.
So everyone's lovable. Just think intrinsically everyone's amazing and lovable because of who they are intrinsically.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easy to fall in love with them. And for a little while, we can usually deliver pleasure to somebody if we put our mind to it. But that could really confuse the issue. If we haven't first asked some questions about what it's really like to go down the road with them.
So what are some key questions we can look at for asking when we ask ourselves what it would it be like to go down the road with someone?
Well, this is one of the components of the seminar that mm-hmm. I've done, the ultimate relationship.
The ultimate relationships.
It's based upon an understanding and learning how to recognize different levels of our being. And here's the thing we haven't learned. We haven't learned how to ask questions of each other. And so our desires push questioning out of the way, even make it last. Because we're so desperate and hungry to have some contact with one another. Mm-hmm. Nobody's told us this process of asking questions. So we actually think that relationship is somehow magically going to just happen, or there's a cosmic Ouija board, or I'll just find the right one. And we're kind of desperately longing for that because our need for someone is so great. So we skip all the questioning because it's embarrassing and inconvenient and it's analytical. Hmm. Doesn't feel like falling in love.
So where do we get our perceptions of falling in love in this culture?
Well, now that we have the various media we have, it's fairly risky that we imprint to all kinds of wild things in a formative stage.
Okay.
So one thing everyone has to do is kind of go inside their mental and emotional box and look inside and ask, have I fixated on certain things just because the media's been forming my mind?
Hmm.
So there's three things to think of. Your genetics, meaning are you like your ancestors?
Hmm.
Are you still acting like them? Two, parents. Have you been bent out of shape by the way that they interacted? Were your parents trained in relationship that you know of?
I don't think anybody's parents were.
No, mine weren't.
The closest, I think, are some of the Catholic Church where
they were trained in not having relationship, I think.
No, I think the only thing I actually value about that is the fact they have the discussions about money value systems before they get into it. Mm. But yes, and sorry, listeners who are Catholic who might be listening to this.
Yes, no disrespect intended. Mm-hmm. It's just that this hasn't been a question that's been asked.
No.
Sometimes questions have been asked like, will you follow the rules or will you be a good Catholic? But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, have you learned how to interact with other human beings? Mm. And have you learned how to operate with the opposite sex? Do you actually know how they do things automatically? What does testosterone make you do, and what does estrogen make you do, and what is it like to be inside of a female body, and what is it like to be inside of the male body, and what are their drives and motives, and what are their needs, and what are they really hungry for? So we actually ask more of people to get a driver's license than a marriage license.
That's so true.
And hence I say gender bender.
Mm-hmm.
Most relationships end up as gender benders.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't expect to learn a sport that way. You wouldn't go to the Olympics that way with no training.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing I think for everyone to meditate upon is that if they're excusing themselves from learning relationship, they're headed toward a gender bender.
Got it.
So at least they should think, wow, this is one of the most important human subjects, and I have never been trained in it. I just had accidental parents, mm-hmm. perhaps literally. I had no training to speak of. I don't want to be just like my relatives.
Mm-hmm.
Again, with all due respect, there's some things in them I like, but I don't want to be like Uncle Ed and Aunt Sally, exactly. And so what am I going to do to learn what intimacy really requires of me and how to recognize a vehicle that's compatible with my own?
Mm-hmm.
And how to set common goals and similar goals in life that will last over time before we make children, if we're going to make children.
Mm-hmm.
So is that we have some idea of how we're going to go down the road together. These are some of the questions that people should be asking before they go rushing out and try to practice.
That makes perfect sense. So you have the Ultimate Relationship Seminar, and you also have other workshops as well to do some of the training. What is some of the practice that you recommend for people to do in between the workshops? So say they sign up, they take the seminars with you, and from there to actually kind of intrinsically make it so they're asking those questions on an ongoing basis so they can really get to know themselves, understand their vehicle, and really understanding the path that they're on.
Well, they have to do some form of self-development work where they get clear, something that clears out the first stage, which is childhood trauma.
Okay.
I don't do that kind of work, but there's lots of different groups that do that. Landmark is a good example.
Okay.
When you get up with other people and you clear out and see that, they have the same problems I have, they had the same traumas, everyone has to get to a certain level of psychological deconditioning and detraumatization from their childhood and their early trauma. At least when they're there, they're ready to start looking at how they do things and to look with some analytical ability at the other gender and say, okay, what does this come from? Now, here's a big leap that I learned that everyone can reflect upon. We could ask, where does male and female come from?
And where does male and female come from?
Well, it appears to come from the same cosmos that made everything else.
Okay.
So it must be, the most logical way to look at it would be that both male and female have their origins in something very profound. So all the indigenous cultures and the yoga culture of India, the cultures of China and all across Asia, all described our masculinity and femininity as coming from an archetype that preceded it, the male and the female. So the source of everything was seen as masculine and feminine. This doesn't create a confusion over who's in charge any more than it has to in a relationship. What it creates is an equal playing field where both the feminine and the masculine are equally essential, beautiful, original, divine, profound, and connected to the source of everything, and playing some important part in their masculine and feminine abilities and energies. In other words, all of us are existing as products of nature, so we should have a more comfortable, natural view of ourselves. And for the people listening who are not gender specific to their body, but who have a different viewpoint of themselves.
I was just going to ask you that. You read my mind.
Yeah, I did. And theirs too, because it's an important question. Everyone who's born is a product of nature and has a right to be here and to be respected and loved and treated with respect and love. But everyone needs to try to ask the question, how much harm am I causing getting what I want? In Sanskrit, in yoga, this is called ahimsa. It means getting what you want with the path of least injury. So, are you hurting yourself? That's not so good. Mm-hmm. So don't do the things that hurt yourself. Are you hurting someone else to get what you want? Is there another way? Because if you hurt too many people, the world's going to become a mess. Mm-hmm. That's your life too. And if you hurt yourself too much by what you do, you're going to injure yourself and cause harm, and that harm will not foster the kind of life you want.
Mm-hmm.
But what if male and female are divine equally? Then wouldn't it be useful for us to look at each other that way?
It would be very much so. Hmm. I want to say back 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, I'm not sure how old Ayurvedic is, but I believe it's about 5,000 years old.
Even 10, quite old.
Wow. When did we, I'd like to believe at one point we honored people this way and asked those questions in regards to our which vehicle did that self-personal growth work. When did that stop and why in terms of our history that you know of?
There's a lot of different theories. It may be just that when life gets too difficult, the best of people doesn't come out. They struggle with each other too much.
Yes, because we go into that flight or fight syndrome.
A lot.
Mm-hmm.
So then Darwinian thinking makes more sense that, it's just a struggle and you just fight with people and get what you can get. Maybe. But what if we're first empathic beings who have feelings and the ability to love and understand life and each other? And what if, under better circumstances, we can bring those things forward? Then it would be in our best interest to arrange life so there's less fighting about life and more loving and respect and intimacy and caring and prevention and care for each other and more massage and more touching and more spoken affection. And what if we created an environment more like that? And what if we've coming out of a period when that's been difficult to do for some reason?
Mm-hmm.
Not to be harsh upon those that came before us. But just to say, what if their life was so hard they couldn't behave as well as is possible?
Mm-hmm.
And what if there were places in the world, India is a good example, Hawaii is another one.
Mm.
If you've ever been to Hawaii, you think, why didn't I understand? Life could be so sweet and gracious.
Mm.
And they'll say, come on, Holly boy. Hey, Shaka, you want to live longer? Not have heart attack? You in Hawaii now. So relax. Go to the beach. Swim. Take it easy. So what if we learn to be a little more relaxed and loving like that and a little slower with each other and a little less harshly judgmental and a little less harshly competitive? Learn to know each other better.
So how do we do that in a world that feels with all the technology that, and I'm thinking especially with, I know sometimes I struggle to keep up with it all and have lots of days that I'll be honest, I'm very glad when my phone, my battery dies because I actually see it as a gift of God where I get a chance to kind of breathe and enjoy that delicious pleasure where somebody can't get a hold of me all the time. But I think of our millennials and the children that are growing up in this day and age where they've never known anything but that. How do we honor them and encourage them to do some of this work and implement that into their childhood early on?
Well, talking about the vehicle that we're in, which is one form of learning, after we just imagine first we do something to get over the initial traumas that might have accidentally happened to parenting or school or bullies or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that everyone comes out of growing up with a certain amount of that. They have to clear it first. And then they should start really trying to learn how to be with human beings. And they should become aware of the pressures of their times as external forces and probably look for teachers and mentors, which is an important part of this, rather than just trying to do it all themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Look around for some older teachers and mentors who are at least 20 or 30 years older than you and ask them, what is the most important things you've learned about living? And then probably we have to start learning how to eat healthy if we haven't been taught it, what things hurt you and what don't. In the world we live in, where many people are trying to make a profit by giving us things that could hurt us, we have to be even more careful. But there was always something to be worried about in the material world. But let's just say that we start specializing in being a human being. You know, I'll tell you a trick I learned for this. If you want to specialize in being a human being, make a little business card for yourself. Just think of it as a play business card.
Okay.
A friend of mine did a really great one. He did one that said his name. He said real estate, and he didn't like just being pigeonholed as a realtor when he introduced himself.
Mm-hmm.
I was real estate and blah, blah, blah. Nobody didn't want to, he wanted to be himself. He's a wood carver and a blues guitar player and an astrologer, and he's interesting in so many ways. So his business card reads his name. I'll leave him anonymous. And then it says, Slays Princesses, Rescues Dragons.
That's great.
And he'll go to a conference. Pick any conference. Health conference, healing conference, something you find interesting. And he'll walk around all day long just meeting people, just introducing himself, just asking them why they're there. Now, if you go to a conference and you're wearing a badge, everyone will talk to you. If you do this on Main Street, they'll avoid you like the plague and think you're crazy. Because they're not wearing a badge that says you're safe. So don't do it that way.
Okay.
But go to a conference where it's safe. You all have a badge on. And then talk to thousands of people. Learn to be a human who knows how to talk to people. Okay? And while you're talking to them, interview them. Without it being critical, just interview them. And you'll find yourself making piles of cards that you'd like to meet and talk to further that were sort of okay and that you probably aren't as interested in. See how important a skill this is?
Very much so.
If you live in a big city, there's millions of people. There's no people problem. It's just how do you get the skills with people? Yeah, you're good at meeting people.
And I was actually going to ask, that was my next question. Vancouver's got a reputation of being really hard to date in. And I've got a few friends who self-describe themselves as personal development junkies, where they will take every workshop. And these are both beautiful men and women. And they will tell me, oh, I'm not ready to meet anybody. I haven't done enough work on myself. Yeah. And I understand that personal development is something we should be doing until we take our last breath. It's something because we're constantly evolving. But I almost sometimes want to give them a kick in the butt just to get them to start living, as opposed to basically burying themselves in their shell like a tortoise, where they're not letting themselves live and letting that underbelly shine as opposed to just shell.
So here's probably their problem.
Okay.
They probably don't have a daily practice of being their true self, which in yoga is called it's called Atma.
Atma.
A-T-M-A. It means the indestructible you. Invisible, indestructible you. We have to do something each day to be that, because that's our safety net about not getting what we want that day. You have to have inner satisfaction to protect you from not getting enough outer satisfaction.
Okay.
So that's a muscle, just like any muscle, and you have to work it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't have a daily meditation practice that teaches them how to get inner satisfaction, they'll be too driven to things outside themselves.
Yes.
If you only do inner meditation, then you won't have a life in the world.
Okay.
That's also not so good.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have one. So, just as we go to the gym for our body or do something for our body, and something for our mind, study, read, learn, go to the library, go to classes, learn things. So we also have to do something just to be happy with ourselves intrinsically. Not because of externals. And without that, you can't achieve the stability that you need to really be with other beings.
Got it.
Some missing vitamin. You either don't know how to embody, you don't know how to think and emote the mind, and you don't know how to be with yourself and be self-satisfied in a divine way. So these are three separate skills that you'll find people are deficient in one or two or three.
That makes sense, because I've got friends who sometimes will say things such as, I do yoga, you know, I'm just on a 30-day challenge at one of the yoga studios in town. But it's almost like a competitive thing, like almost like the Bikram's method, where it's just like, I powered through and I didn't have to lie in Shavasana the whole time.
Yes.
But it's almost like attacking life as opposed to it basically like breathe, enjoy the beach today, well, going full circle.
A lot of so-called yoga is still just physical,
as opposed
but
to spirit.
Real yoga uses the physical and mental to get to the true self.
Okay.
So if they're not doing that component, then when they go to interact with another person, that's also going to be missing. So I call this levels of compatibility. You could be physically compatible, energetically compatible, mentally compatible, values compatible, and evolutionarily compatible. And these levels of compatibility are something that you need to learn to examine yourself on so that you can examine someone else. Because how can you find compatibility unless you can have a conversation with yourself about your strong and weak areas and someone else's strong and weak areas, and then try to meet in the middle? Okay? So you see, we're actually trying to do one of the most complex things that human beings do, which is form a very intimate relationship that's very much at the center of our being. We know how to have superficial relationships because we can walk away.
Yes.
But the closer in they get, the more visible our deficiencies in various areas become. And that's what makes real intimacy difficult.
Yes.
I can't hide from the person I'm being really intimate with.
Yes.
So this is why we're a work in progress. So we're not going to get it finished next week.
No.
That's unrealistic. But if we're not working on all the areas and can't see the different departments of our being and describe them somewhat objectively and see how much progress we're making in that area, then the whole thing gets lumped together. Now, as soon as you lump everything together, ego takes over.
Yes.
And ego's tied to your immune system, your health and well-being. So the collapse of your ego threatens your health. And this is why the whole thing is so dangerous to everyone.
Yes.
See? So until they treat it as a science that they're learning, they're going to treat it just from the ego.
Got it.
Got it?
Yes.
And that's deadly. Because then somebody can make your ego collapse and your health collapse and your self-esteem collapse if you give them that much power.
Wow. Hmm? And I think that's what we all fear, is giving somebody that much power, which is why I think even though we scream for intimacy, and I think that connection with other people is part of self-actualization, but we also shrink from it as well.
Because as a society. In our society, we don't really have training.
No.
See?
No.
And the ego takes over. There's a saying that I use in my relationship seminar. Ego expands to fill the space not filled with knowledge.
That's very apt. And we haven't even touched on sexuality yet. So, but there's so much work to do just with self, with relationships. And I think a sexuality is the next level above that. And please jump in if I'm incorrect about that.
But...
I know there's pheromones, but I like to quote, I don't know if you're familiar with Tanya Diamond. I've had her on the show a couple times from Seattle. She's known as the tantric teacher, but she points out sexuality. Sometimes it's in terms of that initial connection. If you're not asking the right questions, it's just straight pheromones. And that might mean you may have a really, really healthy child, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good example for that child to grow up in, in terms of as a relationship. So,
well, Tantra is one of the things that I've also studied and achieved considerable mastery in over the years because Tantra has a different meaning than most people think. Tantra does not mean sexuality.
No.
It actually means tension. If you reach your hand out, and if we push hands, do you see how the tension is different now just in sitting here?
Yes.
Because now we're doing another thing that creates a different tension while we're doing another thing, talking, that creates a tension. We even use the word attention.
Yes.
So tension, The ten intention comes from the tan in tantra, the Sanskrit word.
I love this. Okay.
See?
Yes.
So the sum total of all the places where you have tension is the tantra.
Wow.
And what changes the tension in one place or the other changes your overall tantra. So the other tantra word is technique.
Hmm.
Because technique is a way of managing the stress of inappropriate tension. And that tantra means then overall a whole series of skills and abilities that learn how to adjust tensions so that the best outcome is produced in anything that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And sexuality, because it's a biological imperative, like water wants to go downhill, sexual energy just wants to make babies. But making a baby doesn't answer the question. It begs the question. Now you've got to raise a person for 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of tension.
That is a
lot
of tension.
That's a big tantra. But the question tantra, as a science asks also, is if you weren't going to make a baby right now, how would you turn the baby-making energy into intimacy energy? So nobody got hurt.
I'm not really sure how to answer that one, actually. Sometimes I think there's so much fear around having a baby that we're going to run out of time, etc., that I think people tend to just jump in and do it anyway because they really, really, really want to procreate.
It's the default setting.
Yes.
And it reproduces ego.
Mm-hmm.
And we're acting out of ego, so it makes sense to make another ego.
Mm-hmm.
But what if first we learned how to exchange energy and to change energy? To do that, we'd have to embody correctly.
Yes.
And to do that, we'd have to overcome our shame of having a body. And then we'd have to learn about our particular body and the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the summer camp for this kind of learning in our culture?
Well, they'll have to come see you.
Possibly.
Yes.
And someone like me.
Mm-hmm.
People who've thought this through, who can help you approach it like you would any Olympic event.
Hmm.
And you hear the saying, I want to have Olympic sex. Yes, so that means you actually want to take the possibility that you see in yourself and self-actualize it with another person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some ecstasy that the two of you can produce. So let's say we call that the orgasm.
Okay.
So what's the opposite of the orgasm?
Disconnection.
The angergasm.
Okay.
Which is easier to have, a great angergasm or a great orgasm?
I think it depends on the connection.
But generally?
The angergasm.
Because
if it's all
water
the other
flows
pieces.
Downhill.
Yes.
It's easier to get mad at frustration than to perfect what you're doing when you get frustrated. And if we're a work in progress, then being with someone and working with the tensions is a mutual thing that you're going to need a mutual hands-on working together, so it's called relationship by agreement. But to make agreements, you have to know yourself well enough, both people do, so that they can make an agreement that they can keep.
And I guess that's one of the challenges when we need to ask about our vehicle is that person actually at the same level as me, where we can have those in-depth conversations and create an agreement together.
Sorry. Are they a good driver? Are they used to the car? Do they know what they're doing? Mm-hmm. Are they compulsive or are they a little more thoughtful? Do they match me on the various levels of my being? Can I count upon that? Is something that they can sustain that tension?
Mm-hmm.
And can I be my true self without hurting them? Can they be their true self and I'm enjoying it rather than put off by it or hurt by it?
Mm-hmm.
But what do we normally do? We put our best self out and lure someone to get close. because we don't have another strategy, so we use bait and switch because we see it used that. In the world of commerce.
Yes, very much so.
Step right up, ladies and gentlemen. She walks, she talks, she crawls on her belly like a reptile.
And then we wonder why we get upset later.
Mm-hmm. And so the relationship seminar that I teach begins with the slogan, I shall always cherish my original misconceptions regarding you.
Mm-hmm.
Listen again. I shall always cherish my original misconceptions regarding you.
I think that's huge.
How do we get to the real person in ourselves and in others? And then how do we have a real opportunity for ecstasy? And how do we keep ecstasy from turning into anger?
I think that's what we're going to find out at your seminars. Thank you. Mm-hmm. We're going to take a really quick short break, and when we come back, I want to find out a little bit more about that. I think that's a really good cliffhanger. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. We will be right back in just a moment as soon as I can figure out how to get the commercial on.
Hey, this is BF from Graymaker. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
There are two things I will carry in my pockets at the end.
Yeah, you guys were always the cool radio station with the, like, fun magazine and everything.
That's right, Discorder.
We always wished we had, yeah. We always wanted a magazine like that back in the day.
Yeah.
My campus radio roots go deep.
We just actually reformatted the Discorder, so it's now in this new cool zine size, and we're really excited
fun.
About it.
Yeah, that was always the cool thing when it came into the station. We're always like, oh man, this is so cool. How do we get this going? And it's really cool that it's all, like, even sponsored and everything.
Yeah.
It's fun. It's really fun. This is Basha Bilat, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Hey, this is Noah from Christ on Parade, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Where's Matt? This is Basha Bilat, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And we're back in Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM on CITR. And if you're just joining us, I've got the fantastic Jeffrey Armstrong on, who is an amazing writer. He is also a Vedic yoga as well as Ayurvedic and does all sorts of amazing, wonderful things. And we've been talking about him in particular, mainly about your ultimate relationship seminars as well as the sexuality as well. So welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Caroline. You're very articulate in this subject.
Thank you. So in regards to, you've got a lot of stuff coming up this summer. So did you want to share us a little bit about some of the workshops that, mm-hmm. that you've got coming up? Because I know you've got a lot. And I think I saw something on your website about some amazing mansion that you've got a workshop in as well as...
Every summer we do a retreat called Yoga for Life for 5 days in August, the first week in August here in Vancouver. And my international students come. People come from all over the world.
Mm.
It's a wonderful time to get together and learn various subjects in an intimate but very desirable environment and to swim and exercise and learn different subjects. And we have a party and we have yoga teachers and we have Ayurveda teachers and massages and deep learning in subjects that really are life-altering, and a great group of people that come. So
it sounds pretty heavenly.
It's pretty delightful.
Mm-hmm. In terms of all the wonderful work that you offer, how has it evolved you over the years? And what do you seek in within all the things that you do that for your own personal development that keeps you excited and keeps you waking up every day?
Well, first, I have a relationship that's based on these principles. And my partner and I, Sandy Graham, have been together now for 18 years, and we practice what I teach, and we live it in our lives, so we keep an excitement and a dynamism and a joie de vivre, and we talk to one another and are affectionate to one another, and so we express these principles all the time. It's what you might call a self-actualized relationship, which leads to freedom and sees the other person as a developing being, and you know what you can count on, and so that creates a great excitement. So also does doing something you believe in life.
Yes.
And a great source of despair for people is doing something that they don't believe in, which carries over into their relationships then.
Which makes sense, which considering a lot of our world going full circle is almost the 9-to-5, where they're in that quest for freedom, but yet are kind of almost like drowning in waters where they can't quite figure out where to get to.
Yes, and this is one of the things that I did with this knowledge that I acquired over the years. I went through a period where I, too, worked in corporations and worked in less than desirable situations as a way of seeing if I could counterbalance that energy. And I learned techniques and ways of living that work in our world. They don't work in the India of 1,000 years ago. That's not where we are.
No.
But they're the same technology, but they're made adaptable to how we live right now. So you might say that I stripped all the knowledge down to its most essentials and adapted it to our circumstances so that we can live it here now, and even in undesirable environments, we can counteract that. And so an important part of the ultimate relationship is that I developed it out of many tools from many cultures and adapted it to our times right now. It's not abstract and theoretical. It's about what works right now with real human issues where we are.
If you could wave a magic wand and have everybody understand that knowledge in regards to that personal development piece and how to recognize vehicles, how do you envision the world looking?
There would be so much more attention to each other's well-being. And our biggest industry would be maintaining health and well-being through various things. Right now, we have a GDP-driven economy that's driven on consumption, and we're all being injured by being in a consumption culture. What we need to become is a maintenance and prevention and healing culture. So we get more massages and be more caring and cook better food and live in better ways and love subtler pleasures and not have to have the newest and best of everything. We'd slow down the consumption and increase the attention and the intimacy and the exchange and the quality of our experiences.
I think that sounds fantastic.
We wouldn't quit technology. We'd slow it down until it's working for us and we're not being dragged along behind it.
That's a really good analogy. I almost envision us being dragged along by a bus where it's going so quickly, just trying to ride those waves as opposed to just stop and breathe.
And most people have not even sorted this out. So when they go to do a relationship, it's one more thing that's dragging them along. A lot of people just withdraw and say, I can't have one more thing drag me along. I'm just going to be alone. Even though it doesn't make me happy.
Yes, and we see a lot of that in Vancouver. The other question I want to touch in, and this may sound like a weird one to bring up 5 minutes before the show ends, but one of the biggest addictions that has been, largest addictions, I should say, that seems to be growing is pornography addiction. And I think part of it's because of the accessibility, because of the internet. But I've heard rumors, and I don't know if this is true because I don't have any stats to back this up, but just from different guests I've had on, that part of it is causing a disconnect in terms of relationships where people are having difficulty even more so than before, and even more shame and stigma about our vehicles, where we don't think we're good enough because we only see, for example, certain types of labia or, you know, just different body parts, essentially, where it has to be that color, etc. So people are spending more money on things in terms of the consumerism, the plastic surgery, so we can match ourselves with what's on screen. And as well as that, just young children actually seeing it. I believe the average age is 9 when a child actually first sees pornography on the internet in North America. And with that, just where that influences our views. And how do we start? What do you think we need to do to shift that? Where there's so much shame and stigma already attached to how we view our bodies.
Big shifts seem difficult for us to make at this point.
Okay.
Where, because the internet was economically driven by pornography.
Yes.
Yeah, and our whole society is driven by commodification.
Hmm.
So until we get enough people who know how to live differently and have a voice, it's going to be hard to change anything politically.
Okay.
So at least we can change it individually and realize that we have to be careful what imagery we allow inside of ourselves and not allow ourselves to have surrogate activities that detach us from the real world. And so it's all part of a culture that's both commodifying us and the people involved in the pornography industry, but more to the point, it's creating a mental fantasy world for us that's a substitute for living in the real world.
Yes.
So the resistance to that is going to happen when you go to real events, go be with real people, insist upon real contact. And this is the catch-22. If you don't feel adept at being a human, this is why I said about going to the trade shows.
Yes.
You go and practice being a person in safe places, under the guidance of a teacher who's helping you to embody as a person. It's personhood training, interestingly enough, that we're lacking. And with more of that, you know the difference between real human contact and this artificial reality that's being constructed to entrap you. Just as you know the difference between real food and something that's artificial and filled with poisons and chemicals.
Yes.
You must learn both things to be a healthy person. To not consume foods that are truly poisons dressed up with excitotoxins to make you eat them as an addict, and imagery and substitute experiences that are meant to addict us and kick us away from the real experiences of human life.
That makes perfect sense.
We have to cultivate those real experiences and cultivate the skills that make us better at being persons.
So we basically need to literally jump out of the matrix.
To unplug. At least it helps to get some mentors. Think that if you don't have mentors, you're probably doing it the really hard way.
Yes.
And look for some mentors and mentorship in this, and it'll become much easier to do.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Mm.
So for all our listeners who want to reach out to you, is the best way through your website?
Best is. We periodically have the Ultimate Relationship and other seminars, and it's always announced there. So jeffreyarmstrong.com, and you can definitely friend us and look in at, it's called VASA, V-A-S-A, Vedic Academy of Sciences and Arts, and see regularly that we have events and things going on.
That's perfect. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Caroline. Great being with you.
Thank you. And I am going to plug you one more time as well, because if anybody wants to do any coaching with you, you do take clients as well for that.
I do. I'm also a Vedic astrologer, and compatibility in relationship is one of the key parts of that.
And I think I'm going to have you on again to talk about that, if that's all right with you.
Twist my arm.
Because that sounds like it would be super cool to discuss.
It's a pleasure. And you have a wonderful laugh, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, everyone, please check out jeffreyarmstrong.com. And up next is Hans von Claus's Misery Hour. He is a very sexy man to be miserable with. He'll be guiding you through the wee hours with his awesome music. And I haven't looked yet, but he has some pretty amazing shoes almost every time. Yes, they're white, they're pointed, and they have black along the sides. And he's one of the best shoppers I know as well. In case he ever does a shopping advice show, he'd be very good at it. I've learned a lot from him over the years, and he's just shaking his head. So I am going to sign off. You've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio.
He's so cool, the temperature dropped 10 degrees when he walked in.
And I just heated it right back up. That almost sounded like a raspberry you were doing on somebody's belly.
Well, metaphorically speaking.
Until next week.
Life is a metaphor anyway.
Life is a metaphor sometimes.
Metaphors be with you.
Until next week, you've been listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM. Bye-bye, everyone.